Now, an amazing story of survival. On Sunday, 17-year-old Laura Hatch was found alive after spending as much as 8 days in a mangled car with no access to food and water. Dehydrated, disoriented, and with a blood clot forming near her brain, the Seattle teen survived after her vehicle sailed 150 feet down an embankment. Family members called her discovery a miracle, and the police, well, the police were not even looking for her when she was found. They were convinced she had run away. Joining us now is Hector Castro, a reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and he joins us by phone from his office in Seattle, Washington. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
So what happened? Laura Hatch, as I understand it, was last seen at a party with some friends.
Right. That would have been on October 2nd. She was last seen at a party, I guess about 11 o'clock at night, and family didn't hear back from her. She was missing for several days. They apparently filed a missing persons report within a day or so. The sheriff's office out here in King County began, you know, some sort of a search. They apparently looked at least one road where she would have been likely to travel, didn't find anything. And, you know, their conclusion was that she likely had run away of her own volition. The family continued doing their own searches. They put out a lot of flyers and so forth and tried to get the media interested. We here in the media in the Seattle area also didn't do much with this until she was discovered on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. How, and as it turns out, how was she found?
Well, it's my understanding that it was a friend of the family. Apparently, they attend the same church. She made a prayer and apparently was led there by, from what I understand, a vision of sorts, led her to look along a particular road, and she found her car down an embankment.
Now, you've talked with the sheriff's department, who must be feeling terribly embarrassed about all of this, but they decided to quit looking because the vast number of 17-year-olds who vanish do turn out to be runaways.
Well, and, you know, I did talk with them, and I spoke with them before she was discovered as well, and, you know, they did take the missing persons report. They did their interviews, and based on the information that they had to them, they believed that, given, you know, her situation, that she had run away.
And did they get any help from her friends? What did they investigate? What was going on at the party just before she left?
Well, I don't know. I do know that, as I had said earlier, the family was trying to get the media interested in doing a story about her being gone. I talked to some family friends before her discovery, sort of explained to them, you know, we don't typically do stories on runaways, offered to talk to them if there was more to the story, and didn't hear back from the family before she was discovered. I was as surprised as anyone when they found her on Sunday. It was really pretty amazing.
Did the family seem to accept the sheriff's department's explanation?
You know, that I can't say. I know that in the immediate afterwards, after she was discovered, you know, there certainly was some criticism of the sheriff's office for not having found them, you know, found her themselves.
Well, for not looking, yeah.
Right. And it's my understanding, I talked with some of the sheriff's officials today, and they're getting a lot of flack. But they're essentially standing by their initial assessment that, you know, based on their initial information, they believe she ran away. And one of the things they also mentioned is even had they known she was in an accident, they wouldn't have known where to look. They looked on what they felt was a likely road. The road where she was found was apparently not one that either would have gone to the party or to her home. It was an unlikely route for her to take.
Amazing that somebody can survive without access to water for that amount of time. How's she doing?
She's apparently doing pretty well, given the circumstance. It's my understanding, having talked with the doctors yesterday, that she doesn't have any memory of the accident, and her memory of the span of time has been seriously affected. She seemed to think it was just a day or two that she'd been there.
Hector Castro, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hector Castro, a reporter for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, joined us by phone from his office in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now to give us some background on how police conduct missing person cases is Eugene O'Donnell, a professor of police studies at John Jay School of Criminal Justice in New York City, also a former New York City police officer and prosecutor. He's with us by phone from his home in Brooklyn, and thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Police have to deal with a lot of missing person cases all the time. How do they prioritize them? What kinds of things make them emphasize one case over another?
Well, they don't have a one-size-fits-all approach, and of course there's thousands of different police departments in the country. Some of them have more resources than others. Big cities are particularly strapped on these cases. But generally, where there's a voluntary disappearance, it's an adult, a person is in good health, there's no reason to believe they're mentally unstable, that's not going to draw a lot of attention. However, a younger person, a person who's disappeared under under circumstances that suggest it's an involuntary disappearance. Those kinds of things may raise a red flag.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of influences do they look for when they decide how to go about this? I mean, are there outside influences that are important?
There are. I mean, it should be said that this is one of the most unglamorous kinds of police assignments. There are no CSI shows usually about missing persons cases. A homicide is much more exciting. These are cases where most of the time people are going to return. 99%, 98% of the people are going to return. I guess a police officer with a missing persons caseload looks at it probably as a set of potential ticking time bombs. One case in there is going to explode at some point, and then people are going to ask questions about what the police did, and very often that's not going to reflect well on the police agency. Certainly family members are going to be upset. So.
Yeah. How do police decide when to stop looking?
There is no hard and fast rule. Again, in some cases, if you talk to family members, they'll say the police didn't look very hard. We just had a similar case in New York, not exactly similar, but there's been a bus driver who's been missing for a long period of time, and only last Thursday did family members conducting their own search find him dead in the woods in Queens, New York, and one of the family members is very upset, and I think it's his wife, saying the police really let them down, that a regular person who's not a glamorous person gets very little attention from the police. So it's very difficult to say that there's any one time where they will cut off. Obviously, some cases are going to just raise a red flag. A young woman who's out at a bar who leaves with some person and is reliable and usually shows up to work and doesn't show up the next morning, that's the kind of case that's going to raise the concerns of the police, and they're going to really be more attentive to that kind of a case. But most cases, they have a track record where they know that most of the cases people are going to return voluntarily.
Yeah, but as you noted, every once in a while one of those will jump up and bite them. I understand you believe the strength of a missing persons unit is often an indicator of a strength of an entire police department's investigative unit.
Well, I think it is, because I think these are cases that are particularly challenging. They don't get a lot of attention, as our colleague in the media says, that they didn't even find this to be of interest until this very unique set of circumstances took place. These units very often are not places where detectives want to go, officers want to go. It's seen as a very disagreeable assignment. So, but the reality is that whereas in homicide, the murderer often leaves his calling card. In these cases, they're many of them are pure mysteries, and it really requires the resourcefulness and the stick-to-itiveness of investigators. And it's in these cases that you often get a real glimpse of how effective the police are at their investigative duties.
There is, I should point out, one TV show that does investigate missing persons. It's called Without a Trace. But anyway, Eugene O'Donnell, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Eugene O'Donnell, professor of police studies at John Jay School of Criminal Justice in New York, also a former New York City police officer and prosecutor. He is with us by phone from his home in Brooklyn. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.